You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, Chris Manning here, host of Locked On Cavs. Joining me today is Evan Damarell. He is from Forbes and For the Sword on Twitter at AmNotEvan. Evan, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, man. It's NBA Christmas Eve. The season's back tomorrow, and then Cavs are back on Wednesday. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm very glad that we're actually going to get basketball. The preseason was like a good whetting of the appetite and getting me a little bit excited about all of this, but it's just been it's been a lot of waiting. It's been a lot of, I think, just kind of nothingness. And the Cavs have kind of been, I don't know how you feel about the preseason or what we've seen. I feel like I didn't learn very much. I think there's like stuff that I learned about Garland that's interesting. I think, you know, we saw Sexton, I think, is doing what he kind of is going to probably be like this year. But like, I don't think Kevin's in a rhythm yet. You know, we don't really, the John Henson and Ante Zizic things have really clouded what could happen in the front court. You know, we haven't seen Dylan Windler. I've liked some of what I've seen from KPJ, but I don't feel like we've learned necessarily, like, an overwhelming amount of stuff, especially with the stuff out there that they're like, the defense is going to be adjusted and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely, like you said, it's just like, you whet your appetite, but, like, everyone's off rhythm a little bit. Kevin's obviously, he looks like his shot's just off right now, and maybe it's just, they're taking these training camp sessions more as teaching opportunities for the younger guys, and maybe the offense just isn't as far along as we thought. But defensively as well, statistically, and I mean everything, it was the worst defense of all time last year, so you can only improve from here, hopefully, but we'll see what happens. But it was pretty vanilla for the most part for the Cavs. And like you said, we saw a couple sparks from some of the younger guys, but injuries stink, and keeping Henson out and then Zizek being out with the plantar fasciitis and then Dylan Windler being sidelined with an injury, it just kind of stinks that we can't get the complete picture of what we're getting. But I don't know. Like you said, some of the sparks were definitely intriguing to say the least, especially Garland. He's been a very fun surprise to watch throughout preseason.
Yeah, I think it's been that he was kind of the most fun guy. Him or KPG, I think, would be kind of the two most fun guys in terms of what we saw from the preseason. But the Cavs, we're going to get into a bunch of stuff today. Evan wrote a piece and talked to Matthew Dellavedova about his future a little bit, and we're going to look at Wednesday's game against Orlando Magic. But we're going to start with the most recent Cavs news. The Cavs have claimed Alonzo McKinney, the ex-Warriors wing from the Warriors, obviously. He's a 27-year-old NBA vet, really was kind came into prominence last year when he filled in for the Warriors a bunch when they dealt with a bunch of injuries, played some in the finals as well, was weirdly waived to make so they could keep Marquise Chris, which is certainly a decision. But I like the McKinney signing. I think he's a guy that can play 2-3-4, can shoot a little bit if last year's any indication, has the profile of a guy of that can just be a youthful NBA player. I think certainly is at a position of need for the Cavs. And I think this is like a no-brainer. Now, I'm glad that if we're looking at evaluating what they did, I think this is a better decision than like keeping Jerome Martin, keeping Marquise Bolden. You know, it's probably, even though I like Sendarius Thornwell, it's probably a little better than keeping him. But what do you make of keeping McKinney?
He's going to be your 14th man, and it's a pretty solid signing for a guy who's going to round out your rotation or at least see minutes for now, just because, like you said, he can play 2-3-4 spot situations, just because I don't think he has the girth to play four exclusively.
He's probably bigger than Jetty, which is like the thing that I makes me like maybe think we're not going to. I mean, again, you're right. It's the 14th guy, but he's like, it's just having a pulse on defense. Like, matters.
Yeah. Oh, no, exactly. It's something, anything really. But it's just like we talked about just a few minutes ago, like the injuries stink because you have Jetty as the primary wing for the Cavs, one of the primary wings for the Cavs, and then Dylan Windler is his backup, and Windler is at least out for another week or two, from what he's told me. And then that's barring any setbacks and reevaluation, and the Cavs would probably handle with kid gloves a little bit, but we'll talk about that later. But no, McKinney's just, it's a good depth signing. People maybe need to pump the brakes a little bit, thinking like he's going to be the difference maker. He's just going to be a nice body to spell Jetty a little bit when he needs some time off the floor. And it's not the worst. I'm fine with it. It could be worse. And like you said, it could be like Jarrell Martin or Marquise Bolden, who both kind of showed that maybe they're not NBA. At least Bolden's not ready for the NBA, and Martin may not be what the Cavs are looking for.
Yeah, and the Cavs have bigs. Like, they have Tristan, they have Love, they have Larry Nance. You know, they have Zizic once he comes back. Theoretically, you'll have Henson, who they've talked up a lot as being a rotation guy. But we haven't seen him play. Doesn't sound like he's not. I don't know if anything was different at practice today. You can, you know, know better than me because you were able to make it over there. But it doesn't sound like it's like a lock that he's going to play. I think it's we're going to know more Tuesday, basically, is kind of the case with Henson. When you think about the roster, and you think about how the Cavs approach this end of the roster, what do you just think of where we ended up here with kind of it being no one that they kind of signed over the summer or anything like that? I think McKinney was the smart guy to claim, but what do you just make of the current setup? 14 guys, two guys on two-way deals. What's kind of stands out to you here?
Not a whole lot until everyone really gets healthy. And just to touch base on what you said with Henson, he was limited in practice today from what we were told. And I know Dellavedova didn't practice today, but Deli was still shooting around after the fact. But just to focus back on what you just asked, it's kind of tough to evaluate right now just because the team's not 100% healthy, but McKinney's good to round out the roster, and you have him. Then if you see Zizek come back healthy, you can see maybe he put in the work to crack the rotation. But like you said, they've been talking up John Henson a lot, and somebody, I forget who, was saying like maybe he could be competing with Tristan for the starting center job. And I said, okay, well, I'll see it when I believe it. It just kind of stinks because I can't really gauge what the bench rotation is going to be outside of Darius Garland, Kevin Porter, and Jordan Clarkson, and Larry Nance. And then whoever that 10th and maybe 11th guy is going to be is just kind of up in the air right now because, like you said, a lot of the guys we brought in this summer the Cavs brought in this summer to kind of just compete for those final roster spots didn't stick. And like McKinney's here, but we'll see how much burn he gets when they're fully healthy. But I don't know. It's just tough to gauge who those like last two guy, one or two guys are going to be in the rotation, depending on how deep Bayline wants to go.
Yeah, I think the thing with him with the end of the roster that's entering is just McKinney just is different than everybody else. Now, Wendler currently, I think, certainly, you know, has, you know, equity within the franchise just of being that first-round draft pick who Bealine really seems to really, really like and kind of fits what Bealine wants to do. So I think he's going to get a chance too. There's just going to be some uncomfortable guys not playing. McKinney, you know, I think certainly he's coming in and is like, I don't know him. I can't, like, speak to this, but, like, he played in the finals last year. He played on the Warriors last year. Like, I assume that guy's going to want to come in and play. One of these veteran guards is probably not going to play or get the ball as much as you would think. There's just some uncomfortable questions with that, Deli being one of those guys. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more with Evan and I talking about his piece on Matthew Dellavedova, so stay tuned for that. Back with Evan. Evan, okay, you talked to Deli. He told you in your piece of Forbes, people can find that in the show notes, that he would like to, him and his wife like in Cleveland. I think he was generally pretty happy to kind of come back to the Cavaliers last year. You know, he's gotten, I think everyone has spoken about what his sort of like the impact he can have, sort of the positive vibes he can kind of bring to this team, kind of provide these younger guys. You know, he deflected it. He got asked about this a little bit of media day as well. But what did you take away from your conversation with him?
I think he's really just realistic with the situation. It's kind of funny how the Cleveland, how he really likes to be here. It kind of came up organically towards the end of the conversation. We're just, because I mostly hammered in on the fact, like, hey, man, it's, we have, or the Cavs have Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Kevin Porter Jr., Clarkson, like those four right there, those are going to be guys who are vying for minutes at the guards, both guard positions. And then you'll be kind of fighting with Brandon Knight as well for those fringe minutes. Like, are you comfortable with just kind of playing a reduced role, maybe just being more of a mentor? And he was totally on board with that. And then it was just like we were transitioning towards the end of our phone call. And I just said, like, oh, hey, congratulations, by the way, to you and your wife and your family on the baby on the way and everything. He said, oh, thank you. And he's just really looking forward to it. And then I just kind of like just said, like, I know you're an unrestricted free agent this summer, but do you wish to stay in Cleveland? And he just said, yeah, I love it here. My wife loves it here. The fans and the organization have always been good to us. And I mean, Deli's a guy who doesn't beat around the bush. It was a pretty quick phone call because he's pretty direct with his answers.
He is not a talker.
No, not at all.
He's honest, but he's not, like, going to give you, like, a paragraph quote. He's going to give you, like, his honest answer in, like, two sentences.
Yep, exactly. And I think that's just what I kind of gather from it. He knows that the team is in a renaissance, just to ape off a term that the franchise likes to use. And that I think he acknowledges the fact that, listen, he may not get a ton of minutes every night, and I think maybe if he's available Wednesday against Orlando, he's going to be the team's starting point guard with Colin Sexton in the backcourt with him. And he said, and I like pointed that out in my piece saying, like, his numbers don't jump off the page. It's like 3 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and 17.5 minutes. And granted, he was hurt in the last preseason game, so that kind of skews it a little bit. But nonetheless, he's just like, realistic the fact that it's like, I'm not going to be scoring a lot, but I'm going to be out there just trying to help guide Colin and Darius and Kevin and Dylan and anybody really who wants to listen to him, because he's just realistic with the situation and he just wants to help the team grow and succeed and be a part of helping the younger guys make that transition from either the collegiate game or some of the bad habits from last year to help guide this renaissance along and help establish that culture that the team's been like just pounding in on for this time. And I don't know, I think it was a good talk, and I'm definitely pleased by it. And everyone just like I spoke to Dylan Windler about it a little bit too, and he's just like, yeah, Deli's just always been a guy who's kind of in our corner and just walking us through everything, even if on the court, during the film sessions, during practice, even in the locker room and just things like that. Like, he tries to drive home all these things he learned. And I forgot to touch base on this. He just takes a lot of the stuff he learned from when he played with LeBron back when the Cavs were in their championship heyday. And even when he played with Giannis in Milwaukee, he just said, just how to take care of your body and how to pay attention to the little things. And I just think, like, small, valuable lessons like that are huge for a team that's young and impressionable like the Cavs. And I think it can pay off in spades in the long run.
Yeah, so here's where I am on Deli. Deli, I think if he's can be some version of the guy he was when he left for the Bucks, that guy has, I think, a lot of value for the Cavs. I think the concern that I would have is that we don't know exactly if he's that guy. Injuries, mm-hmm. I think, have really kind of derailed his time in Milwaukee. Ends up kind of being like dead money in their books, basically gets flipped.
Mm-hmm.
We don't quite, you know, last year his season ended with a concussion. You know, I think that was such a bad roster without a flow and kind of a vision. There's just some weirdness there. With him now, I like the idea of him starting. I think Brandon Knight's probably better than him right now. But I think if you're looking at if both of them play in sort of the way that we sort of expect them to, and they both play well, Deli's probably the better basketball fit. He's at least theoretically a little better on defense. I haven't like run his DPRM and everything to kind of see where he's at, you know, post 2016, but he has the name value of being that. And we know he's kind of that locker room leader. We know that's just a really big strength of his. I think that guy can really help and can be really useful going forward. It's not going to be, like, I don't think you're going to get the Dele that's, like, scratching and clawing with Kyrie, you know, like, in practice all the time. I don't think you're going to get that anymore. It's just not, like, a thing that a guy who's almost 30 is going to do. But I just look at, I look at him, and if he's not that, you know, you do really, I don't know if, even if it's, like, a couple million dollars, like, I wonder what kind of cap space the Cavs reasonably would want to, you know, commit to him. I think it's a question. I think from a fit, from a leadership standpoint, I think that makes a lot of sense. I wonder, considering the Cavs are going to have a lot of minutes at the guards, you know, if that's something they would want to do. And also, like, look, what it comes down to, if he only plays, like, a handful of games this year, or gets, like, really reduced minutes, when he gets to next summer, even if the Cavs are like, we want you back, you know, I don't know what the market's going to be like for him, but what if a team that has a better shot at a title is going to come calling for him? I, you know what I mean? I wonder if, like, what kind of the balance is going to be there with all. That's just, like, a thing we're going to find out this year, but that's like, the concern I would have with Dele.
No, I would totally agree with that. There's a lot of variables at play here, because the way free agency is going today with the extension deadline and the market's drying up super quick. I mean, I'm not saying Dele's going to be beaten down the door for a bunch of teams, but like you said, it's just – it depends on how things are approached this summer. If he's willing to take less money, and I mean, the Cavs are going to have a lot of cap space this summer. Maybe they try to preserve as much of it as possible and get a team friendly deal on the books with Dele and just keep him around as a bit of that veteran leader. But I don't know. It's just, it's for now, I think what the mindset, the mentality he has going into this season is great. And what I love to keep him around as a fan. Yeah. I mean, let's be frank, when he was traded to Cleveland before the fact, it just kind of felt like the then Quicken Loans Arena was a bit of a mausoleum, just really couldn't get a pulse from the crowd. And then I remember his first game back, he checked in, and it was like people were acting like it was like, I don't know, one, don't want to say LeBron, but like the return of somebody you love so much, and everyone was just going absolutely crazy for him.
It got people pumped. He got huge. He got like legitimately big pop from the crowd last year.
Exactly. Like that's the other thing you got to keep in consideration too. Like we talked about this over the summer, like with trading Kevin Love. It's just Dele's also one of those names that keeps the casual fan engaged because people love him for what he did to Steph in the NBA Finals a few years ago, and so that's another factor that comes into play too. But it just, it depends on, I guess, what his market really is and how this season plays out. Cause like you said, there's just so many variables that could be in play, like reduced minutes or barely touching the floor at all. And like, what if there's a team out there that says, hey, be our backup or third string point guard and come win a title with us. And like at this point, when you're entering your thirties, I mean, I know he's trying to start a family, but I think you're, kids young enough you could uproot them and start a life somewhere else too. It's just so there's a lot of variables at play that could impact whether or not he's with the team past this season.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what his role looks like. I'll be curious to see too, because he is on this expiring contract. I wonder if the Cavs will decide to flip him. You know, like I don't think that's like out of the question. And he, like, I think that's less likely after we look at today, because the Cavs are in this position where, like, the next summer isn't going to be that interesting in terms of good free agents. You alluded to this, like, that this market has really dried things up. So, it's, you know, I don't quite know what really to expect with all of this now, but the Cavs are certainly going to be trying to flip people, trying to get assets to give teams cap space. I don't know how effective that's going to be now. Dele is one of those guys. You run down the list, he's making, you know, he's only making 9.6, but like that's like a flippable number.
Clarkson, for sure.
Tristan, Brandon Knight, John Henson, all these guys are flippable. I'll be curious to see like if that ends up happening at all. If that ends up becoming a thing we kind of see happen where his end isn't, you know, him leaving at the end of the season, it's him getting traded in January or something.
I would agree.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back to look ahead to Wednesday's season opener. But stay tuned for more from me and Evan. All right, Evan, we're back. Before we get into Wednesday's game, which, again, Cavs Magic, and then they have their home opener Saturday against the Indiana Pacers, the official Cavs heights are out. Some of the roster, you know, is not exactly accurate because it's guys aren't on the team anymore. But yeah. So run through some of the notables. Tristan Thompson listed at 6'9" as the tallest not guy on the roster, aside from Dean Wade, who's on a two-way deal. Kevin Love at 6'8", Jetty Osmond at 6'7", Larry Nance Jr. 6'7", Jordan Clarkson 6'4", KPJ 6'4", Delly's at 6'3", Knight at 6'2", Sexton at 6'1", Garland at 6'1". I think the big takeaway there that, like, in terms of official height, Sexton and Garland are the same size.
Yeah.
Even if their wingspans are different. And Garland's a full 15 pounds lighter than Colin Sexton, who's got the NFL cornerback frame.
Yeah, and now I can see why Larry Nance was a little hesitant to share his height during media day, and now it makes sense maybe why they want to play him on the wing a little bit. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I also don't know if I buy that KPJ and Clarkson are the same height.
I don't either, because I've stood next to Kevin Porter a few times now. He's super tall. I mean,
I'm not tall. Like, I'm like 5'8" on a good day, but he's taller than Jordan Clarkson, I think.
No, for sure, and like. I don't know how much more encouragement he needs, but if you ever go to Justin Rowan's Twitter, he fawns over how tall Kevin Porter is all the time. So I don't know. I don't believe he's 6'4". Maybe it's just because you and I are both less than 6 feet tall that he seems like a giant compared to us. But I don't know. He just definitely seems bigger than Clarkson. So I was surprised by that. Kevin being 6'8", I'm not really surprised about that either. It's just, he's tall. He's a way taller than me, and he's an NBA player and a supermodel, so I'm not going to poke fun at him for being 6'8", so.
No, I just think I don't know. I just don't know if I buy that he's the same, that the same height is him, is that KPJ and Clarkson. That, and I think the Clarkson thing is probably the most notable. I don't know if anything else in there is, like, really a surprise, but, like, I'm not actually surprised that Larry Nance is only 6'7".
Neither am I. Especially when you... I don't know. He just kind of seems like he's a tweener forward. He always has looked like that. And now that his official measurement's out, it's just not. I'm not shocked, but it is what it is. It's just the NBA players are an inch or two taller when they wear their shoes. And, well, more news at 8. So
yeah, NBA players taller in their shoes. And certainly there's going to be some guys who are a little shorter than we think. And some of I don't know how tall some of these people actually about my house. Like, I would love to be there, like, when we saw the measurements of KPJ and Clarkson. Like, I would like to I would like to know. Okay, but to look at Wednesday's game, I think Orlando is a playoff team. I think it's a really tough game for the Cavs to start off the season with. I think the biggest thing for me is we know Orlando, who is number one in defensive rating in the second half of the season last year, is going to have a good defense. That is a trademark of Steve Clifford teams. Not much has really changed with them. Jonathan Isaac, again, should be taking a leap for them this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really curious to see. I think my big thing is just what does the Beeline offense do against that Orlando defense? We saw when the Cavs played the Magic last year, they struggled a bit. They had some games where they were close, but, like, he had the one Jetty Osmond game where he made some mistakes and it committed some turnovers, cost them a game. Mm-hmm. I want to see what this offense can look like against what should be, like, a top 5-10 defense. And to me, that's the biggest thing, considering that's what the Beeline era is supposed to be about and what he's supposed to really bring here. I'm not expecting to be great on day one, but can they manufacture good buckets against a good defense?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely going to be a good barometer test. Indiana will be a good test just to jump ahead as well. But Orlando is definitely a tough draw to get as your season opener. Your season opener. But we'll see how the Beeline offense truly functions. And I don't know. Sometimes the results are a little shaky in the preseason after playing San Lorenzo. But I guess we'll just have to see what happens. Hopefully everyone's just kind of locked in and ready to go. And like what we talked about earlier at the beginning of the podcast, like, Kevin's shot isn't flat. And it's just kind of like he's the head of the snake and it trickles down from there. If he's hitting his shots, I think it's going to be a lot easier for the Cavs. But if he gets flustered with all of Orlando's length, it's just going to trickle down to the rest of the Cavs, and they're going to get flustered with the rest of Orlando's length. So it'll it's a tough draw, but I guess maybe a good lesson as instead of loss, if we're just going to be frank.
Is there a certain guy that you want to see perform on Wednesday? Like a certain guy you want to see how they play, see how they kind of show up? Is there someone you're most looking forward to kind of seeing on opening night?
If we're talking for the Cavs, I'm still really bullish on Darius Garland and KPJ, but mostly Garland at this point, just because it's just been teases for the most part, just because the Cavs are bringing him along slowly. I'm more than positive he's going to be coming off the bench for Cleveland at least till mid-November to possibly late November, early December. So I'm just curious to see what we get with him. He only played 5 games at Vandy, didn't play in summer league, limited for the most part in preseason, either because of the freak injury or just, you know, it's preseason and he hasn't played competitive basketball in a while, so you don't want to give him like 36 to 40 minutes a night. But he's definitely who I'm looking forward to seeing the most, just to kind of like see as a barometer of where the Cavs' future is at. And it's a good starting point just to see going forward, like, is this guy going to be our point guard is the team's point guard of the future, or is he just going to be another nice complimentary piece down the line? And then on the flip side of things, I am also interested to see how Markelle Fultz looks in actual NBA action, because his story's sad, and I just hope he finds success and happiness in Orlando, and it'd be nice to see him just kind of put together a solid season for the Magic.
Yeah, I'm pumped that I get to watch Fultz just right off the bat. I think that's going to be like that's a fun thing. That's a good thing for me to kind of dive into, and at least, like, you know, to see how, like, he who at the very least, like, should be a good defender, how he looks against, you know, some of these Cavs guards and stuff, and how him and Sexton match up and whatnot. That's at least, like, kind of an interesting test. It's part of, again, the second night of games. You have, you know, like, the Grizzlies are playing the Heat on Wednesday, stuff like that. You have, like, a mix of kind of interesting games. I would say, for me, aside from Garland, who I think is the clear one, I want to see how KPJ looks. I think, you know, if he gets test to guard Isaac or go against Jonathan Isaac, that'll be interesting just to see how he kind of handles that, a guy who's, you know, already more advanced than him, but similar builds and whatnot. And I think Kevin Love is kind of the other one. I just want, Kevin did not have, I'm going to pull up his stats just to make sure I feel like I'm not missing anything, but in watching his tape and watching what he looked like, I did not quite feel like Kevin was the Kevin we're going to get this season in the preseason. Kevin was, again, you mentioned his flat shot a little bit. It hasn't been the best thing, but so to run through his stat line, 3 games played, less 13.3 minutes, averaged 6.3 points on 40% shooting, 20% from 3, 4.7 rebounds per game, and 0.7 assists. Those are, like, pretty bad numbers.
But it's preseason.
It's preseason, so, like, that's the caveat. You know, he, again, didn't play much basketball last year. I don't expect him to be an all-star right away. But I think it would be, it's going to, like, the team's, like, ability to get through difficult stretches, to ability to perform at a decently high level, is really going to come from what happens with Kevin. And I think it starts with him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't end with him. It's going to matter with Sexton and what we get out of Jetty, who's another interesting guy in this game, considering he's going to, you know, be probably defending someone like Evan Fournier or Jonathan Isaac or Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kevin's probably going to have to post up Aaron Gordon. He's going to have to do stuff against good players. Not that he's obviously very capable, but if the Kevin that we saw in the preseason is what he plays the first 5 to 10 games at, things just become a lot harder for the Cavs, and much harder than they should be for a team that is still very young and still figuring this new system out.
No, for sure. You make a good point with Kevin Love, not Porter. It's tough. It does, like you said, it starts with him, but it doesn't end with him. But it does make life a hell of a lot easier for the Cavs if he's just kind of locked in and ready to go, and he plays more like an all-star caliber player instead of, you know, looking a little shaky in the preseason. But like you said, it's a caveat. It's preseason basketball, so you kind of have to throw some of it to the wind, but there is maybe some reason to be concerned if, like, he comes out just as flat, like you said, for the first 5 to 10 games, and it just makes life a lot harder for all these young guys who are likely to get meaningful minutes right out of the gate. Maybe Dylan Windler told me over the summer that Beilein told them just to be ready, like him as in Darius Garland, Kevin Porter Jr. and himself, but it just makes it harder on them because it's like we keep coming back to Orlando's defense. Like, if Kevin Love has a bad night, I can almost guarantee the rest of the Cavs are going to have a bad night too, because if he's off, it's easy for Orlando just to kind of settle in and just lock in on Sexton and Garland and Jetty and everybody else. It just trickles down. And like you said, and this is another barometer for the Beeline offense, even to circle back to another point, is if Kevin's looking rough out there, it's going to just make John Beeline's transition in his offensive scheme and system just harder to adapt and teach on the fly at this point, because it's harder to do stuff in execution than it is in practice, obviously.
Yeah. So I think the last thing is just to wonder, is like, is the starting lineup, I would guess it's probably going to be, if he's healthy, Sexton, Delly, Jetty, Love, and Tristan. I think that's kind of the five.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I do too.
And then the locks for the rotation, it's, I think, Clarkson, Nance, Porter, and then we're getting into like Brandon Knight and Garland, obviously. I think we're like, it is going to be interesting to see how he manages. We've hit on this a little bit, and it's not something we can like speculate too much on until we like get 10 games of like what he does. But it does seem like it's going to be a lot of like us figuring out on the fly like what his like fit's really going to be with some of this stuff.
It's when you break it down like that, it is, Cleveland does kind of have a bit of a clunkier roster where you have a collection of veterans that all probably want to play and touch the ball, and then you have a collection of young guys who also want to play and touch the ball, and it's going to be, hopefully it isn't tough for Beeline and the coaching staff to figure out a way to make everybody happy, but I could easily see that being a problem 5 to 10 games in. We're saying like, well, somebody's upset they're not getting enough touches in action, but we'll see what happens. And then even at full health, it just makes it a little murkier at that point too, because then you have to sprinkle in Henson and Windler and even Zizek, and you even have to throw in McKinney as consideration too, because I think he could maybe even see some minutes depending on how deep Beeline wants to go into the rotation, just because you have to give Jetty a bit of a break on the wing. And I know they're going to try and play Clarkson a small forward, but that's great. But I mean,
yeah,
he's a score first point guard who is the same height as Kevin Porter Jr. So
yeah, I mean, like, do they want to give up 130 points per game?
Exactly.
So
why not? Let's go for 129 instead.
Yeah, let's dip it down a little bit from there. But that's gonna be it for today's show. Evan, thank you so much. You can find Evan on Twitter at am and not Evan. Again, read his writing at Forbes. Read his daily piece. Click on the show notes below. Read his writing from time to time if you're the sword as well. Thanks so much, man, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.